from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. From grass-fed shaking beef to locally sourced golden chanterelles to salt-roasted pear sorbet, San Francisco has long been a hub of dining innovation. What new restaurants or old standbys are your favorites? We'll get the latest from dining critics on the best cuisine and dining trends in the Bay Area. Join us for Forum next after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to another hour of the Forum program. And in this Forum hour, we're going to talk about restaurants, Bay Area restaurants, and dining with a trio of veteran Bay Area restaurant critics who are joining us for the hour. Michael Bauer, preeminent San Francisco Chronicle critic, executive food and wine editor, as well as restaurant critic for the Chronicle, and executive food and wine editor, as well as member of the James Beard Foundation Restaurant Awards Committee. Welcome, Michael Bauer.
Thank you.
Good to have you back on Forum. Also good to have Jonathan Kaufman back with us, San Francisco editor of TastingTable.com, and he was a restaurant critic for a dozen years at the East Bay Express. Many of you remember him. Also up in the Northwest at the Seattle Weekly and SF Weekly. Now, whoever would have believed it, right? Merging with the Bay Area Guardian. Jonathan, good to have you here. Welcome.
Good to be here.
And Carolyn Jung is also with us by phone this morning. She's a dining blogger for foodgal.com, also a former food writer and editor of the San Jose Mercury News for 11 years. And Carolyn Jung, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning to you. Glad to have such a distinguished trio of restaurant critics with us. And I was just reading an article in Time magazine that 2012 was a terrible year for restaurants, at least so the article said, by Josh Ozersky. Why was it a terrible year? Because there was too much competition, because everybody had to be novel and jump to novelty. Michael Bauer, does that resonate here?
No, I don't think that's at all true. I think it was a good year for restaurants. It wasn't as good as 2010. 2010 was like a spectacular year, my 25 years, the best year. But I would say 2012 was a really good year, and I don't know what he's talking about novelty. I think that, to me, the scene, at least in the Bay Area, has grown richer and has a lot more depth than it did, like, 5 years ago.
Well, how is it for restaurants on Valencia, Jonathan Kaufman? I mean, that's old.
Well, it's been great for restaurants on Valencia up till now, but I do feel like we're reaching a critical mass. I'm a little worried about the future of Valencia Street and all the restaurants that have opened up around there.
Too many. I mean, it's clearly just too many. In fact, Carolyn, let's bring you into this, especially since you're over in the South Bay. In fact, I want to kind of get a reading from each of you about the South Bay in your case, and the city, and Michael's in the East Bay, and Jonathan's. There's a lot of new stuff going on there because it's at the heart of the epicenter, Silicon Valley, and all that. To give us a sense of just really what's particularly good and premier at this point.
In the South Bay?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think sort of we get dissed a lot of times because San Francisco, of course, is San Francisco, and a lot of the food trends happen there first. But, people forget that the South Bay, there are a lot of great places here. We have Michelin-starred restaurants. We are often a hotbed, breeding ground for a lot of chefs who go on to do better and greater things. Chez TJ in Mountain View is a prime example of that. They have just had this really keen eye in being able to pick chefs who are going to become superstars. For instance, Christopher Costo got his big start there, as well as Joshua Skeens. They're both gone on to do amazing things. We also have, we consider ourselves the epicenter of Silicon Valley here, and there's a lot of money and a lot of people who are willing to pay a lot of money to eat well. And there are a lot of people, heads of corporations here or former VPs, former general counsels who've now invested in a lot of name restaurants in the Bay Area. So I think, the the South Bay definitely has made its mark on the food world. And I will also say that we have two things going for it that San Francisco does not, which is we have much better weather and parking is far easier. You'll never have to drive around the block for half an hour to find a space to eat out here.
Well, also, we should mention in that same vein, I guess it's been a good year in the South Bay for restaurants, too, but take pride down there in some of the ethnic restaurants, especially Vietnamese and Korean.
Oh, yeah. We have in San Jose the largest population of Vietnamese people in one city outside of Saigon, and you have a number of just wonderful, authentic mom-and-pop places, as well as a few sort of more modern, upscale Vietnamese restaurants. We also have a huge number of Korean restaurants in Santa Clara, and probably more varied ramen places and pho places than you'll find up north.
Let's talk a bit more about the East Bay with you, Jonathan Kaufman. I know that Comus and Piedmont, I think, is the only Michelin restaurant in the East Bay.
I think so, yeah.
So you've got a lot of everybody always thinks about Alice Waters, but you've got a lot of restaurants burgeoning there, too.
We do, especially in downtown Oakland. I mean, when I was a critic, the critic at the East Bay Express up until about the mid part of the last decade, I always felt like old Oakland was about to take off, but hadn't really. And Jack London Square felt like there might be stuff happening, but there wasn't. But really, in the past 3-4 years, there's been the Uptown area, which is just around Telegraph and 22nd through the 30th, has really taken off with Flora and now Duende, which is Paul Canales' new place, and Hopscotch and a couple other smaller restaurants. And then old Oakland, there's just been right in the past past few months, there's been a group of restaurants that have opened up in the Swan's Market, the old Swan's Market complex. And I just wrote about Miss Ollie's, which is a Caribbean/Californian restaurant run by a woman named Sarah Kernan, who is just really lovely, lovely food. And there's Cosecha right next door, which is doing California Mexican. And then,
that's become big, really, hasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. California Mexican, yeah.
And Michael Bauer, we put you on the spot, I think, here. Producer Irene Noguchi and those kind of questions like last meal, what would you want, or you know, birthday dinner, hidden gems, all those kind of questions that you always get thrown at you. But you mentioned a couple of things to Irene that I wanted to really highlight here, and one was Park Tavern, and the other was Marlowe's. Park Tavern for roasted chicken and Marlowe's for a burger.
Right, and they're owned by the same person. But I guess if you're talking about my last meal, it would definitely be probably roast chicken. In fact, in my column next month in the magazine, I'm going to do, six of the best roast chicken places.
I will look forward to that. I'm a big roast chicken eater, especially on my diet, which but also there's a lot more of what you call personal cuisine now in San Francisco.
Right.
Talk about that.
Well, 10 years ago, it seemed like every restaurant that opened was Cal Italian. And if you didn't do that, you didn't do anything. And I'm talking about more in the destination style restaurants. But now you have more and more chefs who are really kind of following their own vision. And I'm talking about like Nick Balla at Bar Tartine, that's kind of doing Eastern European / California food. You've got Play that's doing Scandinavian. You've got Corey Lee at Benu that's kind of doing Asian in a very high style. You've got Murad Lalou at Aziza that's doing kind of a Moroccan overlay. And you can basically – you could be blindfolded and you could eat these guys' food and you would know it because it's so distinctive.
So what kind of dishes are we talking about?
You mean – what do you mean? Like,
I mean specifically, like when you mention these restaurants.
Well, like at Aziza, if you're going to do the Bastilla, it would have duck in it.
Bastilla with duck.
Yeah. And so it would have different flavors. He kind of uses that and all of them kind of use that as a starting point. At Bar Tartine, they do all kinds of wonderful Eastern European breads to go with it. Nick does dozens of pickled vegetables, and he does his own spices. And again, it's got – all of these have a California lightness, but they have the distinct flavors of that culture.
And we're going to have Michelin guy, Spoiled Pig, taking over Jeanette Etheridge's place. We're
yes.
going to have food there now?
Yes, and it's going to be – I assume it's going to be kind of gastropub food. And she's actually going to be in the kitchen cooking. So I think that should be a really good thing.
Well, We're talking about Tosca, of course. And Jonathan Kaufman, let's talk a little bit more about what's going on in the East Bay. There's some would argue better Japanese and Ethiopian restaurants in the East Bay.
I would definitely agree with Ethiopian and Japanese. I would have to say my favorite Japanese restaurant in the Bay Area is Ippoku, and Christian Geideman is there. He's an American guy, but he lived in Japan for a while, and he has – most of his cooks are Japanese, and they're putting out – gorgeous skewers at night, doing focus a lot on chicken and all the different parts of chicken.
And chicken tartare,
right? And at lunch, he's got a cook.
As much as I like chicken, that's not the chicken. Right?
It's actually good. I was a little worried, but I enjoyed it. But at lunch, he's got a cook who's making soba noodles by hand using traditional methods that he learned. He picked up in importing flour from Japan, and they're beautiful noodles.
Well, speaking about chicken tartare, what happened to the raw food movement? I mean, there was that place over in Marin in Larkspur. I don't see much about raw food anymore.
Well,
kind of been and gone, do you think?
Cafe Gratitude. Cafe Gratitude.
And I think some of that's being incorporated into your mainstream restaurants, as is the vegetarian specialties.
And let's talk about the East Bay and bagels because, there's Sal's over there, which is one of the more respectable delis around, but there are also a lot of pride suddenly in bagels in the East Bay.
Yeah, well, and even at Sal's, they just hired one of their old cooks. Left the restaurant, but taught himself how to make bagels, and he's now working under the name Baron Bagels, and they're great. But there's also Beauty's Bagels. It's on Telegraph. They're doing Montreal-style bagels, which are a little bit smaller, have bigger holes, and they're cooked in a wood-fired oven, and there's the Authentic Bagel Company and a couple of other places.
How do we hold up, Michael Bauer, here in the Bay Area in general, against, say, New York or Los Angeles? I know those are really – that's really a broad question and the most general kind of question. But I have a friend, for example, who's a restaurant snob who goes to New York a lot and says, they got it all over us and everything just about except maybe some Asian cuisines, and who says the only good restaurant in San Francisco is Kokkari. So that kind of questions his credibility.
Kokkari's good. I don't mean to
I think Kokkari's so great, but I mean to say it's the only good restaurant in San Francisco is
you
absurd.
Clark Wolf, who's kind of a food consultant, once said, and I believe it, is that San Francisco starts the trends and New York grows them. And in a way, that's kind of true. I think that they're both great cities. I think New York has it over us because it has 10 times the population. But I think per capita, I think in the Bay Area, I would say per capita, the food is better here.
And Carolyn, let me go back to you just on a kind of another general question, and that is, you know, a lot of restaurant critics despair and a lot of people in general lament the fact that Yelp has had such an influence and the bloggers and so forth, particularly restaurant critics. How has this reshaped just the whole restaurant business in your judgment?
I think it's become a whole lot more competitive, and there's sort of this race to be the first to go to a place. Because of all the online reviews by people. But then again, they could make the case, too, that it's actually a really good thing because it gives more publicity places, it gets the word out faster, and it gives you another venue to sort of vet a restaurant, another way to figure out if you really want to go there. I think for restaurants, it's become a little more challenging for them because, who is ready usually on the first day of service to do a bang-out job? It usually takes a few weeks to sort of get that groove going. So to be judged automatically by your opening day is pretty brutal sometimes. And as we have seen, Yelp can have a huge, huge impact because it has such a huge audience. So I think it's making a lot of restaurants more on their toes about what they do and trying to do better quality from the get-go.
By the way, if you've just joined us, we're talking about restaurants, talking about food, particularly restaurants in the Bay Area, focusing on that. And let me do this. Let me open the phone lines. I know there are many of you who want recommendations, and you've got three premier critics with us and may want to tell us about a restaurant that you particularly think is worthy of the public knowing about, although you run the risk of people getting excited to go there and then getting more difficulty with a reservation. You may also want to go on record here as talking about because they do it on Yelp, bad service or bad food or whatever you like along those lines. In fact, a lot of those things that go on Yelp, you have to wonder, did the competition have those things put in? Sorry, but that's just my reading of it. Give me the toll-free number and feel free to join us. We do welcome your calls. It's 866-733-6786, and you can call us now if you have questions or comments about restaurants in the Bay Area. Again, 866-733-6786. Do you see some trends, and do you see particularly restaurants that you think are especially worthy of taking note of, or the opposite? You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, and there are a number of other ways to join the program. Besides emailing or calling us, you can go right to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment, or go to our Facebook page or tweet us. And our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. Talking with Jonathan Kaufman, Carolyn Jung, and Michael Bauer, and talking this whole hour, really, about restaurants. Carolyn, to get some tips from you in the South Bay, you got Manessa and Los Gatos, kind of put South Bay on the map with fine dining, and Alexander Steakhouse, just to highlight a few, a couple.
You also have Alexander Steakhouse just opened a new spinoff, The Sea by Alexander Steakhouse in Palo Alto, which is in the old Trader Vic's spot on El Camino Real, and it's gorgeous. I mean, all the vestiges of tiki-dom have been wiped away, and it's beautiful looking and elegant and looks like something that Tiffany's created. And the food is spectacular. They're sourcing seafood from all over the world, including Hawaii, which, you know, of course, has some of the best tuna and whatnot coming out. So definitely that's a great place to check out.
And I mentioned Manessa and Los Gatos, which a lot of people really like. Also Calafia, which has the first chef who worked for Google.
Yes.
All that Silicon Valley money, boy. Are they looking at their apps more than they're eating, or I wonder? Also, can you say something about Ecopia, that year-round farm deal that's down there?
Oh yeah, that's a very exciting venture. It's down here in Campbell, and it's in a warehouse, and they grow year-round indoors under LED lights. So kind of like your pot farm, but a much more gourmet, upscale, and legal enterprise. And the cool part is, you know, it was started by a former Selectron CEO and president of Lockheed. So they're utilizing the top-of-the-top-of-the-line technology to make this happen. And many of your top restaurants in the Bay Area are now using the microgreens and microherbs that are grown there. And Ecopia is also starting to branch out into the consumer market by offering their greens for sale, as well as salad kits that are made by their in-house chef who used to work at Quince Restaurant in San Francisco.
And again, Carolyn Jung is dining blogger for foodgal.com, former food writer and editor of the San Jose Mercury News for 11 years. Michael Bauer, I noticed that your colleague, Paoli Lucchese, over at SF Gate, started talking, did a whole column about restaurants that are opening up in 2013.
Right.
What excites you?
I think that several kind of redos, like I mentioned Murad Lulud Azizi, he's going to open a new restaurant downtown in San Francisco. I think that's going to be really interesting. Joshua Skeens, again, who had Cezanne, is going to open nearby. I think both of those are good. Let's see. A16 is going to be opening in the East Bay, which I think will be interesting. I think Croquetta, which is Michael Chiarello, is going to open in the on the Embarcadero. He's going to do a Spanish restaurant. I think that will be interesting. Charles Fan is opening another place. It's going to be kind of, I think, a nod to New Orleans. It's going to be called Hard Water. So there's quite a bit on tap.
There's some Creole cooking, maybe?
Yeah.
And what about in Marin, just for a moment, to get your
You know, Marin has been – it's interesting because my top 10 of the year, which, you know, I came out with at the end of this last year, six of them were out of town. And several were in Marin, which is kind of unheard of. You have Mill Valley Beer Works in Mill Valley, and they do some incredible dishes. It is kind of a brew pub, but on one of my visits, like 10 of the 13 dishes were vegetable. And you never know it. They're so well done. There's also Terrapin Crossroads, which is Phil Lesh of the Grateful Dead. And he's basically hired Phil Hernandez as the chef. And they're doing American food, but it's really very well done. It's one of the few venues where you have both entertainment and food service, and they don't interfere with each other. So I think that's a really good place to go.
Bradley Ogden and Lark Creek Inn still holding its own? It's changed and metamorphosed.
Well, he's not really involved, and it's now called the Tavern at Lark Creek, and it's a lower price point. But, yeah, I think that's good. You also have Pico in Larkspur that's good, and I hear that it's kind of had another resurgence, and it's really good now. So there's a lot going on there.
Well, there's a lot going on everywhere with restaurants. In fact, Jonathan Kupman, I noticed that the former chef of the Slanted Door opened a place over in the East Bay. Sandbox?
Actually, that's a bakery over in San Francisco.
Not food?
No. That's Mutsumi Takahara, and she opened that about a year ago, or two years ago in Bernal Heights. But there are a couple other pastry chefs.
I thought it was in the East Bay, and I thought it was a restaurant. So, but you mentioned Quince was mentioned before. A former chef of Quince opened up a place called, I think, Craftsman and Wolves.
Again, that's a pastry chef. Yeah, William Werner. He opened it on Valencia Street.
So no food there either.
He does great sandwiches, and he'll do little plates, but it's mostly pastry.
Do you know anything about Deli Board?
Yeah, I've been there. Big, huge Midwestern deli sandwiches.
How are they?
They're pretty good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I understand it was opened by a guy from Cleveland, which, of course, piques my interest. But and I'm interested in delis. And what else do you think is particularly noteworthy as far as what people ought to know about in the East Bay? You mentioned Bartatine before?
No, that doesn't sound familiar. There's a new coffee place called Bartavelle that's in North Berkeley.
I'm not sure. But, how does Chez Panisse still hold up?
It's doing fine. I haven't been back since the new chefs have been on board downstairs. But I had a lunch upstairs, a few months ago, and it was lovely as always.
And what Hopscotch is doing, I think, is really interesting in Oakland. Have you been there to that?
No, not yet.
Because it looks like a diner, but and he does fried chicken, but the fried chicken will have some Asian accents on the side. Like the pork chop, for example, has I think it's lotus root with lardo, and they have pickled turnips. So there's a little Japanese accent, and the food is amazing, and the service is really good too.
Oh, you mentioned the burger at Marlowe's. The fried chicken there is pretty good too, actually.
Yeah. It is. It is a fried chicken sandwich.
What about ribs? Where do we find good ribs now?
Well, I have to give a shout out to a place out in Concord. It's called Slow Hand Barbecue. He was showing up in San Francisco outside bars, and he had a roving smoker, and he was doing both Texas and a couple other different styles of ribs, short rib, and brisket. And it's some of the best barbecue I've had in California. And so he opened his own place in Concord now.
And I noticed on your website you had a whole thing about Chinatown Diaries. Does anybody want to go on record here for great dim sum? Because people are always interested.
There's a new dim sum place in Chinatown called Lai Hong Lounge. And it's the owners of Hong Kong Lounge out on Geary, which is one of my favorite dim sum places in the city. And it's not as good as Hong Kong Lounge, but it's really pretty good, and the prices are a little bit better. But in Chinatown is not necessarily the place to go get dim sum.
Chinese restaurant, Michael?
It's interesting. There are two new Chinese restaurants that have opened just in the last month. There's MY China or My China, which is Martin Yan, that's in Westfield. And they really do. They do a really good job with noodles, and actually they have a great roast chicken. And then there's Hakkasan, which is kind of a chain, very high end. They spent $7 million on the interior. And so we'll see how that does. That's basically at Kearney and Market.
And we'll see what you think or hear what you think about restaurants and take your questions and your recommendations as well as maybe your brickbats when we return. We're with Michael Bauer, Carolyn Jung, and Jonathan Kaufman. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. From grass-fed shaking beef to locally sourced golden chanterelles to salt-roasted pear sorbet, San Francisco has certainly long been a hub of dining innovation, but we're talking about Bay Area restaurants in general here this hour. What new restaurants or old standbys are your favorites? And we're getting really the latest from dining critics. on the best cuisine and dining trends in the Bay Area. Carolyn Jung is with us by phone. She's dining blogger for foodgal.com and also former food writer and editor for the San Jose Mercury News for 11 years. Jonathan Kaufman in studio, San Francisco editor of tastingtable.com, previously was restaurant critic for 12 years at the East Bay Express and was with Seattle Weekly and SF Weekly. And Michael Bauer, executive food and wine editor and restaurant critic with the San Francisco Chronicle. And the annual Dine About Town San Francisco takes place, by the way, January 15th to the 31st, and more than 100 of San Francisco's best restaurants are offering a two- or three-course lunch menus for $18.95 and or three-course dinner menus for $36.95. We asked our Facebook fans to share their hidden gems. Here are some of the responses. Martha says, Cascal in downtown Mountain View on Castro Street, seriously good, has something for everyone, is absolutely a local favorite. Josh writes, there's a wonderful little hole-in-the-wall Korean barbecue place in the Fillmore across from the Popeyes and Safeway called Arang. One of the few places open until 2 a.m. in the city. Their barbecue beef box is to die for. Amrit says, there's a small Indian place in Concord, Hot Basil Cafe on Oak Grove. Very good Indian and Thai food. And Patrick recommends Hole in the Wall in Sebastopol. Awesome biscuits. Oscar writes, El Farolito and La Costa, both in Oakland on International Boulevard. El Farolito has the best tortas, Mexican sandwich I've ever tasted. La Costa has awesome Mexican seafood. Both are literally across the street from each other. And Meredith says, Halu in the Inner Richmond. Great Izakaya, funky decor, friendly service, and family fun. So there are some of the Facebook recommendations. Lots of emails and lots of important questions I want to get on here. But let's go to your calls here and begin, Heather, with you. Good morning.
Good morning. I wanted to make sure I got some shout-outs for the North Bay. We've got so much going on up here. One of the biggest news is up in Healdsburg, we've had just a flood of openings. Ari Rosen from Scopa has opened Campesina. We've got Spoon Bar that opened with a former Aziza chef. And they also opened Pizzando, which is just down the street. These are both in the big hotels up there. And then in Santa Rosa, Spinster Sisters opened this year, and that is one of the investors in Prune in New York City helped open that restaurant, and it is absolutely divine. And then really interestingly, in Forestville, which is just a tiny town up here, a lot of restaurant action. We have a former ad hoc chef has opened Backyard and is literally doing the whole, you know, farm to table, but literally sourcing out of his own backyard, sourcing within about 10 miles of the restaurant, and bringing in things like water kefir, which is made in Sebastopol. And then I was going to say a couple of favorites over in Napa, the Thomas that opened this year is out of this world, and then Goose and Gander that opened up in St. Helena. So we've got a lot of action up here.
You sound like a restaurant critic.
I'm a food writer for the Press Democrat, which is the local newspaper up here, and my life is eating and drinking. And I know Michael's been up here to a few of our restaurants, but there's a lot to come and check out up here.
Well, thank you for that. I appreciate that. In fact, speaking of restaurant critics, I'm looking at a listener email here that says, I've often wondered about the business of being a restaurant critic. Does your schedule require you to eat out every day? Do you dine in disguise like Ruth Reichel? It sounds like a dream job, but do you have to work out like an Olympian to keep in shape? Carolyn Jung, can I go to you first on this?
Oh, my God. sure. Go to the only woman.
Well, she mentioned Ruth Reichel.
Okay. So I wanted to clarify first because, like, what I do on my blog is not a bona fide restaurant review where I give stars and whatnot, because I'm actually most times invited in by the chef or the restaurateur to come in and check out the restaurant. So I'm not going anonymously and I'm not going in disguise, but I am giving my honest opinion of what I thought of the place. As for eating out, I think it gets harder as the years go on to keep off all that you eat. So I think I speak for Jonathan and Michael that we spend many hours at the gym probably.
Yeah, but both these guys I'm looking at, they're svelte, they have their boyish figures. Want to comment on this, Michael Bauer?
Well, I kind of think it's a misnomer that you know, you necessarily gain weight when you eat in restaurants. I think that especially in the Bay Area, there's so much fresh produce and things. And I think finally that's another trend that's kind of happening. Where I think finally people are accepting protein in smaller portions and more vegetables. And I see more and more of that. So I don't really have problems keeping weight off. And I do eat out every night.
Jonathan?
Well, I will have to say that when I moved from being a restaurant critic at the SF Weekly to Tasting Table, where I where I'm not out 8 to 10 times a week, I did lose about 8 to 10 pounds pretty easily.
Well, actually, another listener wants to know, just tweeted us a question about talking about trends, opinion of the food truck movement. I don't know if I necessarily thought of it as a movement, but I guess it really is, isn't it, Jonathan?
Yeah, yeah, it is. And, you know, I enjoy a lot of what's happening with the food truck movement. I feel like it was pretty exploding in 2010 and 2011. And in 2012, it seemed to stabilize. But they have now these roving either off-the-grid events, or now there's a permanent food truck space in South of Market called Soma Street Food Eats, where they're like they do in Portland. It's a permanent space, but then they have a roving group of trucks who show up on different days.
My brother told me about a place right around the corner here, a pizza food truck, which he was raving about. I didn't even know about it.
Is it Del Popolo?
I don't know.
It's pretty amazing.
I'm going to investigate, though, rest assured. Yeah. Although, not the best thing to eat for a diabetic. But let me go to some more calls here. Sarah, hi, you're on.
Hi, I'm calling. I am a huge Yelp user. I find a lot of restaurants that way, and two of the restaurants I found are, it was already mentioned, Slow Hand Barbecue. His ribs are the best I've ever had, even cold and left over the next day. And then Compass Star in Martinez, started by Rachel Zavala. She makes her own breakfast pastries, but she's really known for curing and smoking her own meat. She makes her own sausages. Everything she puts out is high quality and fantastic. You really should go there to try her stuff. I know she's making cassoulet for tomorrow, so it'd be a good day to head out there.
All right. Thank you for that. Let me get back to Yelp here for a moment, though. I don't know who on the panel here wants to respond to this, but you hear these stories, and I don't know that they're urban legends or apocryphal. They sound very real to me about, you know, young punks coming in a restaurant and saying, give me a bottle of wine or I'll write a bad review of Yelp, all that kind of, I mean, how much of that kind of stuff really goes on? Do we know? Or can we know?
I don't know how much that goes on, but I definitely, you see a lot of off-kilter reviews, like people who go in, I didn't get my water when I wanted my water, so I'm giving this one star, you know. But I also think Yelp has been great for small restaurants, especially small restaurants, you know, like ethnic restaurants. It gets the word out about places like that where they don't have PR people or access to, you know, food writers. I find a lot of smaller places through Yelp.
Well, speaking about small restaurants, this is Mark who says, why do restaurant critics mainly review very high-end and expensive trendy restaurants and almost totally ignore very good neighborhood places where real people go? They're writing for the 1%. Michael Bauer?
Yeah. You know, we actually do a lot of those. I don't. I do the destination. And the philosophy there is that when you go to these type of restaurants, and there are a lot of them, you'll pay, you know, now it's probably $150 for two people or two. You try and give people an idea of what they're going to get. And so we do the destination restaurants. So it's places that we think people will want to go. I'm not sure the entire Bay Area will want to go to a lot of neighborhood restaurants. They're great if you live in that area. So when we do neighborhood restaurants, it's something like Outerlands, for example, which has something that makes it special that you want to attract people to. By the same token, if it's a bad neighborhood restaurant, we aren't going to write about it.
Another listener writes, I live in San Francisco and hate restaurants. Almost all serve unhealthy, rich food and generate an enormous amount of waste and suffering due to their use of animal products. The consumption of fancy cooked foods provides a brief period of novelty followed by hours of less than optimal mental and physical well-being. Just plain raw fruits and vegetables are all we need and provide us with almost unimaginable energy and vitality. Wants to put you guys out of business, I think. And the restaurants, too. Let me go to another caller here, and that's Rick in San Jose. Hi. Rick, are you there?
Yeah, I'm there. I've been a fan of Southeast Asian cuisine for a long time, and recently I got to try Burmese for the first time at Rangoon Ruby in Palo Alto. And I was wanting to know if your experts there had any Burmese recommendations anywhere in the Bay Area. I'm willing to drive. I love it.
That's interesting because I tried Burmese recently for the first time. Phil Kaufman and his son, Peter, took me to a place over on Clement, which was actually pretty good.
Well, the Bay Area is kind of is strange. It probably has the densest concentration of Burmese restaurants in the United States. And the first restaurant that opened up in – well, they claim that they're the first. I wasn't around here back in 1984. But it's called Mandalay out in California in 6th, and it's still one of the best.
That's the one. I said California, yeah.
Yeah, they have a really good
I said Clement, I meant California. Yeah, thank you. Some more recommendations from listeners. If you can afford, Andrew writes, the calories and the saturated fat, then as far as old standbys, I have only one word, Fentons. Christine writes on our webpage, my favorite new restaurant of 2012 is 31st Union in San Mateo. As their name implies, California being the 31st state to join the union, all food is locally sourced, seasonal, artfully prepared, and delicious. They also have an interesting selection of wines on tap and local spirits. It has a refreshingly urban vibe, which sets it apart from typical suburban restaurants, and it has become our go-to spot anytime we're in the neighborhood. Do you know it, Carolyn Jung?
I've heard of it. I have yet to get there, unfortunately, but it's on my list to get to.
Well, let me give you some more to put on your list, perhaps. Katie writes, Champa Garden in East Oakland, incredible hidden gem serving Laotian and Thai food. Dona Thomas for their consistently delicious upscale Mexican food. Disco Volante for their fried avocado tacos. And the best breakfast brunch has to be Brown Sugar Kitchen in West Oakland. Those cornmeal waffles are like nothing else. Also, it may not be fine dining, but as a San Jose native, I will always love Original Joe's, a.k.a. OJ's minestrone soup, half order of mushrooms, and a martini from the bar. Heaven. Okay, let me read a few more of these. Emily writes, yesterday we had lunch at Napolito. Do I have that right?
Napolito?
Napolito, thank you. Okay. Food was excellent, as was the value. No combination plates, drowning in cheese. Please recommend other similar style Latin American and Mexican in particular. Recommendations?
Comal in East Bay is really wonderful.
How do you spell that?
C-O-M-A-L.
Uh-huh.
The chef was at Delfina for 5 years, and so he has that same sensibility that he brings to Mexican food.
And I'd also have to recommend Tamarindo in downtown Oakland. They've been around for about 10 years, but they were sort of one of the first to really up the game in doing small plates from around Mexico, but beautifully done food.
And here's Kristen who writes, Heavenly on Mount Hermon between Scotts Valley and Felton. Awesome service, even with the house packed, which it is most Sundays. Super burgers, gyros, all salads and soups, and everything on the breakfast menu. Coffee is a choice between house and dark roast. No question, dark is best. Sent my son in for 5 pounds to bring back with him to Germany. Still wake up in Germany 1.5 years later, pining for brunch at Heavenly. And Frank asks, why doesn't the Bay Area use a posted health report letter grade, A, B, and C, or they as they use in L.A. and New York?
Well, they do a number system now in San Francisco.
Yeah, it's not letter grades, but it is
right. But it's right. Like 100, you know, starting with 100 being perfect.
We'll go to more of your calls. We go to Marilyn. Thank you for waiting. Join us.
Hi. Well, I want to talk about the great produce in the area, and as a vegan, very frustrated that when I go out with my friends for fine dining for one of those destination area experiences, I don't get good food, and I get a lot of rolled eyes, and I'm wondering why these fine restaurants can't accommodate on the menu, you know, on the menu for everyone to see at least one vegan, no animal products, great meat.
You would think they would be accommodating more. There are a lot of vegans out there.
I think
Michael Bauer?
Most of the high-end probably have one, but she's right, the selection is limited.
Well, keep searching, Marilyn. Where would you recommend, by the way, as a really good vegetarian restaurant?
My husband, who's an omnivore, and I enjoy plants because we can both eat the foods that we want. Plants on the Embarcadero in particularly. I had a pleasant surprise at Zuni last week where I was able, it wasn't on the menu, but they were able to make wonderful accommodations without holding up the whole meal service, you know.
Okay, Marilyn, thank you.
I think Gather in Berkeley is really good for
Gather?
People. Yeah.
Yeah, and Jonathan's nodding his head in agreement.
I was going to say, I also think that if you're able Carolyn to John. Let a restaurant know in advance, before you come in, they're very accommodating in trying to meet your dietary requirements.
And Grillo is our next caller. Is it Grillo or Grillo?
It's Grillo, calling from San Francisco.
Yeah, hi.
There's a beautiful restaurant around the corner from my house. They just opened up 4 months ago. It's called Ayutla Restaurant. You spell it A-E-U-T-T-L-A. It's a little town in Mexico. And it's a mother and daughter restaurant. They're very, very older. But this restaurant is fabulous. Has the best horchata. Not like the taqueria horchata all watered down. Real horchata. It has web burritos. I mean, you name it, seafood. This place is the best place to eat in the Mission District right now. The only thing is always empty. Always empty.
Well, I don't. Thanks to you, I don't think that will be the case anymore. Thank you for that recommendation. And I want to hear more of your recommendations. I think we've got here from EK. Good morning.
Hi. I just wanted to, for two questions. I wanted to find out the name of that restaurant in Mountain View that Chris Costa got his start at. And the other one is, are there any restaurants like Natural Selection in Portland, which serve exclusively vegetarian food in the South Bay?
You know the place in Mountain View he's talking about, Carolyn John?
I couldn't quite hear what he was
Shea
saying.
TJ's.
Yeah.
Shea TJ's. Yes, yeah. It's actually an old house that was converted into a restaurant many, many years ago, and so you have all these like little tiny jewel box rooms with Tiffany lamps on the table. And the kitchen is tiny, and it's very upscale, very personal. And, yeah, the owners over the years just have this incredible knack for picking up-and-coming star chefs. So it's definitely a place to watch. It's definitely a place to sort of try wonderful high-end cooking from a chef before they go on to do even more incredible things.
Well, let me thank the caller and go to more of your emails. Ian writes, are there any restaurants that are open as an open source? For example, a website with all the recipes and where they buy their ingredients?
Not yet. We haven't seen that.
No. That may be a new wave. Robert writes, in San Francisco, the main reason we do not go out to eat in San Francisco is because most restaurants, and it would seem most of the restaurants Mr. Bauer likes, are not quiet and really too noisy to have a reasonable conversation. This may be because of the influx of dot-commies and other 20... I've never heard dot-commies before. That's sort of in the spirit of Joe McCarthy. And other 20-something rich kids who work for Google, et cetera, who like to get drunk and shout and talk on the phone during meals, but it's also the result of restaurant designers here wanting to create noisy rooms.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's true. Restaurants are noisy, and I think it is because of the design that we like. We like that industrial design with the raw walls and floors and high ceilings, and they don't do the proper sound batting and things like that, which is what makes Komal in Oakland or in Berkeley so interesting, because they brought in Meyer Sound, and so it's like walking into a big head-canceling earphone.
Here's John, who writes, Buddha Thai in Mountain View has the most sensational pumpkin curry, the best I've ever had. And Michael tweets us and writes, how about recommendations on the peninsula? Carolyn, can you help us there?
For anything or?
He just says
okay.
Recommendations
well,
for the peninsula. Good cuisine.
Great cuisine. Attic in San Mateo. The chef there is Filipino heritage and does incredible sort of modern takes on Filipino street food, and his adobo wings are to die for. Also on the peninsula, you have in San Mateo Allspice, which has one Michelin star. Sachin Chopra is the chef owner there, and he used to work at Amber India. And what he's doing there is really interesting. He's taking Indian food, Indian flavors, but making it more contemporary. It's not blow your palate out, hot spiciness. It's much more refined.
That brings up another question. People who really love spicy food, where should they go? What should they eat?
Mission Chinese food would be the place.
Yeah. And Gloria writes on our Facebook page, for all the vegans and vegetarians in the East Bay, Encuentro in Jack London is delicious, a favorite of the queer lesbian community. Ted says, Artisan Bistro in Lafayette is great. And Patrick tweets, Slow Hand Barbecue in Pleasant Hill, not Concord.
Oh, thanks.
Okay. And another listener tweets, soon as I'm done with the gluten-free month of January, I'm going to hit up all the dim sum places that have been mentioned. Drool. All right. More of your calls. And we'll go next to Pengrove. Richard, hi.
Hi, Michael, and thank you for the show. I'm going to give everyone a wonderful, tasty treat and gift today by mentioning Yanni's in Pengrove. All handmade, homemade sausages. They're closed Monday and Tuesday so that John and Francesca, husband and wife, can make the sausage. It's a little tiny, tiny place. It's only the door of the place wide, a couple of seats inside, a couple outside. Fresh baked rolls from right down the street from Full Circle Bakery. You cannot do better than that. Rosso's Pizza as well in Petaluma. For those of you who out there who, like myself, can't have wheat or are gluten-free, in Rosso's Pizza, they spent 3 years making their own recipe for a gluten-free crust. And let me tell you, I'm from New Haven, Connecticut originally, so I know pizza. This is the only gluten-free pie that tastes like real pizza.
Well, thank you for that. Appreciate your calling. And by the way, if you want to keep up with the latest restaurant openings and find new recipes, KQED's food blog, Bay Area Bites, that's bayareabites.org. Michael, you know, sometimes when you come out with your top 100, I wonder, how do you evaluate? I mean, it's so tough to come out with, you know, like top 10s or any of those kinds of things because this, the range of eating and cuisine is so diverse, the criteria and touchstones to what is and isn't a great restaurant.
Yeah, I mean, and I try and be diverse, but over the years I think it's gotten a little more generic where and it's mostly high-end, especially after 2010 where I changed out 26 of the 100. You know, it's like how you compare a La Taqueria to a Manresa or, you know, a Benu. So it's just always – to me, a pull and tug. So by the end of the time when it's due, which is usually in March, I'll have like 109 or 110, and then I'll just start whittling them down.
It also strikes me as difficult, maybe even vexing. Maybe ask you, Carolyn Jung and Jonathan Kaufman, when you have to when you come out, and critics do this, you know, this is the best blank, you know, that you can find in the Bay Area. Well, there are a lot of places that you haven't tried, you know, and yet it's a very easy thing to say that just to show how superlative you think it is. Carolyn?
I agree. I, you know, I try not to say that because I know there's a wealth of other variations on whatever dish that I haven't tried. I think the also thing that sort of vexes me that I sometimes see in reviews is someone saying or criticizing a particular dish, and it's the first time they ever had it. So they don't really have maybe the background and the cultural knowledge of what the dish is actually supposed to be like to be able to judge whether it's, you know, representative of what it's supposed to be or if it really is sort of a bad rendition.
And what about when you get just lousy service, Jonathan? I mean, you can get great food and lousy service, right?
Oh, yes. You know, as a critic, it didn't really upset me because I always felt like I had the last word. As when I'm on my own, it really can change. It can ruin a restaurant for you. And I think restaurants that don't pay attention to service, you know, I wonder if they stay around as long.
I think critics can also do a lot of damage to restaurants. I mean, you know, Frank Rich used to review a play and it got a bad review and it would close the next day. He had that kind of power. And I'm not saying you guys are, you know, all powerful like Frank Rich was, who was known as the butcher of Broadway because of the place that he closed. But there is a lot of power that goes with the position of being a critic. I mean, you can bring a lot of people into a place and you can keep a lot of people out. Just an observation. Let me go to more of our callers. Elena. Good morning, Elena.
Good morning. Thank you. I'm so excited to be here. I just want to see if you guys know about Goat Hill Pizza.
They do.
I do. Yeah, it's in my neighborhood where I live, so I do know about it.
And ranks high with you?
You know, honestly, no. There's been so many pizza places that have opened, but it's really popular, and people who have been going there for years love it.
Jonathan?
They have spoiled a crust.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, do you want to add something, Jonathan?
Oh, no, I mean, I agree with Michael.
Okay. Well, you love it, Elena, don't you? From the sounds of it.
It's a great sourdough crust, and it's just such a cozy place.
Okay, thank you for that. And on we go to more of your calls. Let's go to Mill Valley. Claudia, hi.
Hello. I'm calling from Mill Valley, but we love Dixie in the Presidio. The food is amazing, and the service is always fantastic, and I love the Hush Puppies.
I've heard some good things about Dixie. What can you tell us here?
Oh, the portions are so sensible, not overdone,
and everything on the plate is beautiful and tasty, to say the least. And I'm not like a big Southern person, so the food is really Northern California with a Dixie flair. And it's very innovative and very, very good.
Well, thank you for that. And actually brings up another question. Carolyn Jung, let me go to you. How important is the appearance of the plate, particularly in these high-end places, which are a lot of what we're talking about? I mean, it used to be all that Nouvelle Cuisine stuff, and, you know, some people could care less, like an old peasant like me. But, you know, there are people who really like the way the food is prepared and the way it looks on the plate.
Well, they always say we eat with our eyes first. It is the first impression when something's put on the table in front of us. I think it is important, but I think it also depends on the sort of the price point that you're eating at. You know, if you're eating at a very high-end restaurant, of course, you want something to just be dazzling on the plate. If you're eating more sort of a moderate restaurant, you know, as long as it looks appealing, you know, that's fine. It doesn't have to have all the bells and whistles. And I think sometimes people get tired of that because sometimes so many things are arranged on a plate just so, all separately, and it's kind of perplexing to a diner, like, well, does this go with this, or what order am I supposed to eat it in? And sometimes people just don't want to think that much.
Are we getting more prefix stuff, Michael?
Yes, we are. I think just about every young chef these days are doing a prefix menu. I think one of the most interesting, I think, is at Commonwealth, because what happens is a lot of these chefs, the tasting menu keeps creeping up. There, the food is really innovative, and it's actually stayed the same price for about a year.
Let me, Christina, let me get you on here quickly, because you have a vegan restaurant, and somebody really wanted that desperately, a good one, yeah?
Yeah, and they can accommodate very easily, and they specify it on their menu. It's Saha at the Carlton Hotel on Sutter. And, you know, it's not the cheapest place in the world, but it's very affordable. It's good value. They know how to pair wines really well. And the service was great. The food was fresh. I don't own any stock in the company. It is a really good restaurant.
Well, thank you for that. And again, if you want to keep up with latest restaurant openings and find new recipes, you can go to KQED's food blog, Bay Area Bites. That's bayareabites.org. And you can also continue to put your recommendations one way or the other on our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. My thanks to the three restaurant critics we had with us this hour: Michael Bauer, executive food and wine editor and restaurant critic for the San Francisco Chronicle; Jonathan Kaufman, San Francisco editor of TastingTable.com, and Carolyn Jung, dining blogger with FoodGal.com. Thank you, our listeners, and thanks to our producers, Judy Campbell and Irene Noguchi. Engineer is Danny Bringer. Executive editor is Raul Ramirez. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.